Yeah, and I'm happy to introduce Christoph, that is going to talk about migrating Fastlane Companion to Kotlin. So give him at least a big round of applause.
Good morning, everyone. I hope you can hear me. Yeah. So I'm very honored to be present at the first ever Kotlin Dev Room at Fastlane. My name is Christoph Bales. I'm a freelance Android developer from Brussels. And during my spare time, I make a few Android applications like Fastlane Companion. And I'm going to talk about this app today. So Fastlane Companion is currently the most popular Fastlane schedule app for Android. There are other ones, so I invite you to test them. I don't have a monopoly, but of course, it's Fastlane, so the source code is available on GitHub, and everybody can check it out. The application is available in binary form on the Google Play Store, and there are about 4,000 active users every year during Fastlane. It's also published on the open source store, FDroid, but I don't have any stats. I don't know how many people are using it from this store. So I will start with a bit of history of the app quickly. So this is actually a picture of the app running on the first ever Android phone, the HTC G1. So the app has been introduced in 2014, so it's already 6 years old. And it's been created like as a rewrite from me of an existing app called Fastlane Android. And from the start, I really wanted this app to be like a showcase of the good Android development practices. And over the years, I continued to update the app to introduce a few new features and to make the code up to date with the latest Android trends. Most notably, last year in 2019, I migrated the database layer because it's really a database-centric app. So I updated the database layer to make use of Room, the Room library from Google. And this year, I introduced a dark theme, and most importantly, I did the biggest refactoring ever because I rewrote the whole code in Kotlin. So there is not a single line of Java code left. So how did I manage to do that? So if you're running version 2.0, you are not running the Kotlin version of the app. So I did that in the course of 1 week. It was a very busy week. I converted the project file by file using the Kotlin plugin from Android Studio with the automatic conversion as a starting point. And I proceeded like this. So I started with simple classes with no dependencies, like the utility classes, the model and entities, and then I moved on to the database layer, the view model, the fragments, and finally the activities. I think this is the right way to do it because when you arrive at the more complex classes with more dependencies, then you can rely on the lower layers which are already converted in Kotlin. And I was actually surprised by the quality of the codes generated by the automatic converter. And even after the automatic conversion, the IDE kept suggesting me a few changes to make the code cleaner. For example, here it proposed me to change the if statement into an if expression, because in Kotlin, if is actually an expression. And then right after that, it proposed me another change to use the Elvis operator, and now the code is even more compact and readable than before. But of course, this is not enough, and I had to rewrite big portions of the code by hand in order to really leverage all the Kotlin features that are not available in Java. So let's take a look at a few examples where Kotlin shines compared to Java. So first of all, in many Android apps, you always have like utility classes like this, string utils, for example. And usually you put a bunch of methods there, you don't really know how to organize them, and sometimes they can get quite complex. So I managed to refactor most of the utility classes into top-level extension functions when it makes sense. For example, here, a simple utility method on a string. And also, I leveraged the Kotlin standard library, which has much more features than the Java standard library, in order to simplify the code. So here, I'm using the filter nuts function to just make this function much simpler than before. Another example where Kotlin shines is, for example, this class. In the legacy code base in Java, I had this single class which represents the result of the download operation. It's actually a single class which represents three different states. So it represents either a success with a value or an error, or the fact that the database is already up to date? Well, if you try to represent three states with a single class in Java, the code can get quite messy and complex. Well, in Kotlin, of course, the right way to do it is to use seed classes. So now I have one subclass for each state. It's much cleaner, and when you have a constant state, you can just use object, which is a singleton. And additionally, the compiler will also check that you are testing all the cases successfully when you are using the result in a when statement, for example. Now, our final example is the database layer. So like I said earlier, I'm using the Room database library, so most of the database code is generated automatically by the annotation processor from Room. But I still have to write the SQL queries by hand, and most of the SQL queries are actually very complex, like you can see here, and they don't fit on a single line, of course. So in Java, you have to write it like this. You have to concatenate a bunch of strings, and you have to not forget to put a space at the beginning of each line, otherwise the query will not compile. And in Kotlin, you can simply use multi-line strings, so it makes these SQL expressions much easier to maintain. You can easily indent them as well. Now let's move on to the model classes. So the model and the entities are actually the classes where the most dramatic changes were introduced, as you will see now. So this is a typical model class from the legacy code base in Java. So it represents a link at the bottom of the of a talk detail page. And as you can see, you have a bunch of fields, and then for each field, you have to write the getter and setter method. So it's a lot of boilerplate code. This is the rest of the class, it's not over. So I also have to overwrite equals and hash code by hand. And then finally, because this class implements parcelable, I also have to write all the parcelable code by hand in order to properly serialize this class. And now in Kotlin, yeah, it's much simpler, as you can see. This is the same class as before, but at a fraction of the size. So basically, you still have the same fields, but now they are declared with a short syntax in the primary constructor. And because the class is a data class, then these fields will be part of the automatically generated implementation for equals and hash code. I don't have to write it anymore. And also, because this class is annotated with @parcelize, then the parcelize compiler plugin will actually generate the parcelable implementation as well for these fields. Also, I forgot to say that this class is now read-only. Before it was mutable, so now it's now safer than before. If you want to learn more about parcelize, I suggest you to read this article I wrote last year. It's quite big, but it's a deep dive into the feature, analyzing the compiler code and the limitations of the plugin and how you can overcome them. It's quite a big read, but don't be afraid, it's worth it. So now let's talk about null safety. Well, it turns out that in the previous code base, even though it was quite stable, there were still a few places where the app could actually crash. For example, here I was not testing if an event had a start time. It's possible that an event doesn't have a start time if it's not assigned to a time slot yet. And in this case, the app in Java would just crash, because if you pass a null value to the dateFormat.format function in Java, it just crashes. But after I converted that class to Kotlin, now the compiler doesn't let me compile this code anymore. It forces me to do the null check. And now the code is safe, and all is well. So in general, I prefer to always use non-null and read-only fields when possible. Because when a field is non-null, you don't have to check for nullability, of course. But you have to assign an initial value. So when you can assign the initial value immediately, then it's simple. But sometimes you can't always do that. So if you can't assign an initial value immediately, you have two choices. Either you can use latinit with a var, which is not read-only, or you can use a delegated property, which is lazy, and in that case, it's read-only. I strongly recommend you to use the second option, because if you use latinit, actually, it can be quite dangerous. So, for example, if you forget to assign a value to the latinit before you read it for the first time, then the code will compile just fine, but then it will crash at runtime with a null pointer exception. So we are back to the Java days. So that's what I did here. For example, in all the fragments, every time I try to read an argument, like here in this example, I read an event in the field, I use lazy, and in this case the field is non-null and read-only. Now let's talk about Android KTX. So Eric already introduced what it is. Basically, it's a set of libraries provided by Google, which provides Kotlin extensions for the Android framework and also for the Jetpack libraries by Google, in order to make these APIs more Kotlin friendly. So here is the most common example is the view models delegated property. I don't know if you're familiar with the view model provider API in Java, but it's quite a lot of boilerplate code usually. And thanks to this, you can just write in a single line of code, you can fetch your view model, and it actually works like a lazy, which is specialized for view models. So the first time, it will create the right view model class, and then it will cache it. Another example where KTX was quite helpful is this kind of code. So it's quite messy, as you can see. I needed to do a few transformations on live data because I'm not using Eric's Java in the project. And because you can't, with the Java API, you can't really chain the transformations. So I had to introduce a temporary variable here in order to chain two switch maps. But now in Kotlin, with KTX, it's much simpler because we have these switch map and map extension functions. So now I can chain them easily and the code is still understandable and readable. And a final example where KTX really helped make the code cleaner is for the spannable string builder API. I don't know if you know this API, but this is one of the worst API on Android if you use it in Java. And if you move to KTX, then Google actually fixed the API by using another kind of pattern, which is like a DSL to build your span string. So in this case, it's much simpler, as you can see. And now let's talk about coroutines, because everybody likes coroutines, and that's what you've all been waiting for, probably. So yes, I like coroutines too, and I try to integrate them in the app, and I will try to show you this with three main examples. So what I like the most about coroutines is how easy and safe it is to switch threads. So for example, here I'm downloading my schedule XML file from a background thread, and I can easily retrieve the value from another thread because withContext is a suspending function. But then it turns out that if I call this function on the main thread, it will start on the main thread, then it will run my block on the background thread, and it will then automatically return back to the main thread thanks to context preservation. And this, in my opinion, makes the thread switching safer and simpler than with Eric's Java, for example.